If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Thursday, I believe. Yes, Thursday. U.S. Open starts today, Father's Day weekend. A lot of rain expected. A lot of information right there in the opening segment here of Above the Fold. A lot to go over today, as we talked about on Tuesday. Busy meeting week. Some votes taken. Positions exposed. And a lot of good to report. And also something that's been nagging at me we're going to talk about in the 11:30 segment. You know, I think we've got enough evidence now here locally to talk about elected officials trying to divide our community. I'm not going to mention any names during this segment, but I am going to talk about topics. And there's three or four issues that it appears that we have a number of elected officials that just want to take these issues out of context and to divide us. To try to do what's being done at the national level. So I want to touch on that because it can have some, you know, real ramifications about how we move forward as a community. You know, I have said here often that the Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency is a great meeting if you have the time in a hotel room downtown, because it just the meetings go for hours. But I was able, the reason I like them is because there's 12 elected officials in a room at one time. They get edgy because it's a long meeting. They get upset with each other, and you can learn a lot about the dynamics. Well, the Blueprint meeting that addressed the Northeast Gateway was only addressing that issue. It was still a 3.5-hour meeting, but I went down and took in the meeting in person, and you know, I reinforce what I say. You learn a lot at these meetings about these elected officials, and I both good, bad, and I think something that's instructive on how we move forward. But the next segment, we'll talk about that vote, how the vote went, what the vote was decided on. We'll talk about the critics of the gateway and why they were against it. And then, you know, in the bottom of the hour, we'll talk about some of the things I learned at that meeting about some of the issues that I think are, you know, officials are using to divide us. I don't know if they're doing it on purpose. I'm not going to talk about motives. I'm just going to talk about facts. But I don't know if they're doing it on purpose or if it's just, if it makes them relevant, or if they think this is a bigger political strategy, campaign strategy. But we'll talk about that. You know, in the last segment, we'll talk about some local economic numbers. We've got residential real estate sales for the month of May. We're going to compare them to last May. I think you'll be shocked. Well, not shocked. I mean, things are going up. We'll look at gas prices, too. You know, I was looking at a 12-month chart. It's amazing how the change in gas prices just started in November, right after the presidential election. Now, I know there's a big debate over what the increase is about, but it's pretty consistent across the country. But we'll look at where the gas prices are, how far they've come, and go over that. Because, you know, there's suddenly, I read the Wall Street Journal, mostly just read the titles, the first couple paragraphs of a number of stories. But, you know, there's starting to be this concern that inflation is really going to start having an impact on the economy here in the next 3 to 6 months. And, you know, so many decisions that are being made, you know, we're familiar with the term elections have consequences. But if you look at how fast we are going from being independent in some of these fossil fuels to where we're now moving because of the administration's view on greenhouse gas effect and wanting to be more environmentally friendly. I mean, you're starting to see utilities change their investment strategies. They're going to quit drilling for oil and natural gas, and prices are going to go up, people. And it's, you know, this is, this all sounds good when people talk about it, but, you know, I don't know that the rest of the world is going to be following us. They're going to be using fossil fuels, I think, a lot longer than we are, and it's going to put us at a disadvantage. But hey, this is, again, elections have consequences, and we'll start looking at that impact on the economy. And no better look than gas prices, because that obviously is something that everybody has to pay for in terms of transportation. So we'll look at that in the last segment. Did want to touch on the Leon County School Board meeting that took place this week. Just a couple of issues. We talked about the items on the agenda on Tuesday, and you know, the one, the title the Title I issue, we're getting more questions about the Title I schools. I think everybody's a little shocked that we have 23 schools out of our 43 that qualify as Title I schools. We've talked about that on air here. We've written some articles about it. We're getting some feedback about the eligibility requirements. And this is an issue we're going to continue to ask about, because I think, you know, again, measuring where we are from an education standpoint, used to be graduation rate, but now that is so easily manipulated. You know, you look at some test scores, but, you know, you would think Title I schools would be something you would not want in your community. You would work hard not to get a Title I designation. But, you know, if you think about it, people that are in the education bureaucracy, they get more money if they identify a school as a Title I school. So they may have an incentive to actually have more Title I schools. So anyway, that's an issue, not much discussion at the school board meeting about that. Assistant Superintendent Dr. Alan Cox discussed the positivity rate of the COVID numbers. He said that it was about 3.5%, down from 4% in the last 2 weeks. They are still talking about the mask situation. And again, this sort of will lead into a little bit of what we're talking about, dividing people. There's still people on the school board that are holding out this hope, not this hope, but they don't want to completely close the door on mask and mask wearing. You know, Superintendent Hannah was pretty strong in saying, this is my decision. We're going to go with a voluntary policy, which supposedly began Monday. So anyway, that's an issue that is, I think, will still be on the agenda. Well, not maybe officially on the agenda, but will be talked about for the next few months. At the meeting, Alice Striplin announced that she's resigning from her Children's Services Council position due to conflicts in motion for the appointment of Vice Chair Daryl Jones in her stead. So Daryl Jones, who works with the Office of Economic Vitality under the Blueprint banner and is also a school board member, now will be on the Children's Services Council, which is just getting ramped up. And, you know, we should have some more coverage of that. They've had two or three meetings which were relegated to trying to get the nuts and bolts put together. I think I've seen in a press release or a email that now they are going to be approving a budget and looking at spending some of the money that they'll be getting from a loan from Leon County government to get started. And so that is, again, the Children's Services Council will eventually be taking in $7 to $8 million and spending it on children's services. And it's a 10-member board. The meetings so far have been, from what I understand, early on have been long, 3 to 5 hours. And so it will be interesting to see when they get into, I don't know if it's going to probably be a year or so before they get into a routine of what they're covering. But I think it's going to be fascinating to cover that council, because of, first of all, it's new. I think you've got 10 different voices, some of them appointed by the governor, others appointed by officials here. And then, you know, you've got a lot of money. And I think there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on that first, you know, that first set of money that they give out to a children's services program. I think there's going to be a lot of scrutiny, a lot of questions about, first of all, why are we doing it? What are we expecting? And what needle is this dollar designed to move, you know? And when you have new organizations like this created, this is where you want to start getting the transparency and the accountability measures in place. Sometimes it's more difficult when you're dealing with governments that have obviously been in place for decades to try to get them to change the way they do things. But the Children's Services Council is something that is being built from the ground up. And so it will be interesting to see if they can get some of these accountability and transparency measures in place. All right, when we get back, we're going to go through and give you a blow-by-blow description of the Northeast Gateway vote. A lot to learn from that, so stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back after this break.
She loves to laugh. She loves to sing. She does everything.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on RealTalk93.com. It's Thursday. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior, exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call, 385-6649. That's 385-6649. We appreciate their sponsorship here on Above the Fold. All right, the Northeast Gateway. We've talked about it a lot in the last couple of weeks, and so there's two things here. This is about the project, and it's about the elected officials that are voting on the project. Let's talk first about the project. The Northeast Gateway is a road that has been proposed for a number of years, starting in the Canopy development there at Fleischman Road and winding through Wilani Plantation, terminating at Roberts Road, with some connections on Shamrock and obviously providing access to Montford Middle School and Roberts Elementary. Listen, the road was, there's been 2 years of meetings, negotiations with Klarna Estates, the most impacted neighborhood, some meetings with homeowners. And there was an original vote, 8-3, to move forward the project. Some concerns by impacted homeowners and some elected officials put a delay on that, and that's why we had the meeting on the 15th. It was a hastily scheduled meeting because they had to meet a deadline that had some financial implications. Not sure what happened in those 2 weeks other than, you know, I guess some of the elected officials got to ask more questions of the staff, who were basically advocating for the project. Their recommendation was to move forward based on some analyses. So I actually attended the meeting. It was about a 3.5-hour meeting. They had about 20 speakers, a number of business groups there supporting it. Homeowners, or impacted homeowners, were against it. I would say that the Klarna Homeowners Association was there, and they were advocating for moving forward with the road as they had basically negotiated to minimize the impacts on Klarna Estates. I think from listening to the speakers, look, when you do a project this big, you're not going to make everybody happy. There's going to be homeowners that are impacted. I think moving forward, that what you try to do in developing this is to minimize or mitigate this impact. And so that can still be done without doing away with the project. But after the speakers, there was a presentation by the staff of Blueprint. They focused on the amount of time that was given to presenting this project to the public. They noted that it was approved by the referendum on a vote of Blueprint projects. And yes, there had been some substantial amendments to it. But they also talked about the benefits of the project. The transportation benefits were mostly a high priority of the staff presentation. And then they also talked about the economic benefits of future development and also job creation and, opening up new areas for development for the city of Tallahassee to grow. And please remember that this area that goes all the way, Wilani Plantation between Miccosukee and Centerville Road, all the way out to Roberts Road, I think up to the I-10 area, is part of the urban services area. And it may be up to Roberts Road. I'll have to double check that. But the point being is it's within the urban services area. This is the area that Tallahassee is going to grow. Number of groups argue that we need this because of the current housing shortage that we have. And this is where we'll be able to get land and to develop and to provide some growth. And so after the presentation, it was turned over to the elected officials. And I will tell you, the read of the room is that a couple of the elected officials, were very, I think, just frustrated that it had gone on this long and they were having to be at this meeting. I won't name them, but just a couple that seemed like, look, let's get on with this. But overall, there was a motion to adopt the recommendation to move forward. And then there was a substitute motion by Jeremy Matlow to delay it for a year. And that was sort of the approach of those who didn't want the road. The three that voted against the project, the ultimate vote was 9-3-4, were Jeremy Matlow, Jack Porter, and Commissioner Bill Proctor. And I think that it was instructive, on looking at what their positions were. I think if you had if you had to cite the number one position, is I think that most those three feel like the money should be spent in other areas on other projects. And, you know, they talked about the South Side as being ignored and being given, I guess, treated like second-class citizens because this money is going to this project. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next segment. But I think that is a... you can say that as much as you want because it does take a lot of nuance and a lot of facts to try to explain what's going on the South Side. But their argument was, look, we don't need the road. The money can be spent more efficiently or effectively on other projects. And they talked about Orange Avenue, Tharp Street. And so that was their issue. The other thing is, I think one of the things that had been the narratives that had been built up was that there was some, you know, there was some conspiracy that somebody was making a lot of money off of this. And there's no doubt that developers are going to make some money. People that own the land are going to make some money. But Commissioner Brian Welch, who led off talking about the motion to move forward, you know, he's new on the commission. And he said, look, I just don't see a conspiracy here. What I'm looking at, I'm trying to do the best for my district. And he talked about the transportation issues around Montford and Roberts schools. And he said, look, this is going to provide a fix for that. And I think that's a good thing. And he admitted we've got to mitigate some of the impacts on some of the homeowners in the area. But he sort of started it off and was really focused on the transportation benefits. You know, from there, various commissioners talked about transportation benefits and also the economic development. Carolyn Cummings was very... it is very clear, and her point is when you look around at what we can do to jumpstart our economy, this is one of those issues that she felt like is going to create jobs. The Jimbo Jackson, you know, said, look, you know, jobs can change a generation. And it was clear that was the reason why he was supporting that. Now, there was some, you know, as elected officials, you've got to rely on the analysis that staff is offering. And they were pretty clear on saying that. Look, they're not economic development experts, they're not traffic engineers, and they are relying on the staff. Staff caught a little bit of critique from a couple of the commissioners, and you know, the bottom line here is if you don't believe your staff, you need to get rid of them, or you need to give examples of where the staff was wrong and say, look, there's questions here, reasons to doubt what they're saying. But overall, the commissioners, again, 9 of the 12 voted to move forward. And as we say in our article on Taos Reports, that it was jobs and transportation benefits sort of, you know, carried the day. Now, the other part of this is looking at the elected officials that were in the room and decided this project for our community, and which was a really big vote. I think it's important to look at the reasons, you know, look at the debates in between the commissioners moving forward. And this is what we're going to talk about in the next segment. But there was clearly people that were irritated by the critique that the South Side was being ignored. And, you know, you've seen some of the progressive candidates or progressive elected officials, Jeremy Matlow, Jack Porter, and to a degree, Bill Proctor, you know, have been making that argument. I mean, I know Commissioner Matlow had talked about showing pictures of people not walking next to Tharp Road where there's no sidewalks. You know, you've got Commissioner Porter, who is basically saying that, you know, we needed to take more time on this. So we could have made this really the money that we're spending. We could have looked at other ways to spend this money and had a better benefit for the citizens that are in need of improvements. And so, but when you look at this committee, you know, you've got people that supported this and live on the South Side. When you're critiquing what is on the South Side, are you critiquing their votes for this? Are they ignoring the South Side? When we get back, we'll talk about that, you know, political strategy and how it fits into a larger narrative that really is trying to divide us here locally, and we'll look into why they're doing that. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Waiting so long.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Thursday, and I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Looking forward to the weekend. Looks like we'll be watching golf inside with the weather looking like a lot of rain. So we'll see what happens there. All right, we'll go ahead and get into this next segment. You know, as I was talking about being at the Blueprint meeting, you know, it struck me that there's, you know, we've got this national narrative of the politicians just, you know, taking these issues, emotional issues, and dividing us into two groups. And, you know, we're starting to see that here at the local level. And I noticed that with the Blueprint meeting, when you had a couple officials talking about the South Side being ignored. And I sat there and watched, and I could see, you know, Commissioner Curtis Richardson and City Commissioner Diane Williams-Cox, you know, they didn't say anything at that meeting, but they did at the City Commission meeting the next day. As a couple commissioners were trying to defeat or delay the Northeast Gateway Road, one of their strategies was, look, you know, the South Side's being ignored, and we need to be investing that money more in areas where it's needed, which, if you think about it, that puts Curtis Richardson and Diane Williams-Cox in a really bad spot. They live on the South Side, and they're voting for the Northeast Gateway. So, you know, they put them in an uncomfortable position. Well, the next day at the City Commission meeting, they took the sharing of ideas segment, and Diane Williams-Cox started reading off, and we're going to try to get the list of the projects and the amount of money being spent on the South Side. And I think her total came up to $250 million in total projects. And then Curtis Richardson weighed in on some issues that he felt that she had missed on some projects. And, you know, it got me to thinking that, you know, here we are again on an issue where instead of sticking to the merits of a project, you've got elected officials saying, trying to pit one part of the community against another. And if you look, that's sort of what's going on in another set of issues. You look at the law enforcement issue. You know, we've, over the last year, documented numerous times, you know, officials here, elected officials, you know, Sheriff Walt McNeil, who's African-American, Chief Police Revel, they've talked about, you know, listen, we've got issues here with staffing. One of the things we don't have is police officers, you know, abusing citizens because of the color of their skin. And that comes from Chief Walt McNeil, Chief Sheriff Walt McNeil. And so now every time there is a questionable arrest, you get this blow up of elected officials trying to take advantage of the situation to divide us between the pro and, I guess, against the law enforcement camps. And so it doesn't seem to be any nuance, doesn't seem to be any, let's try this approach. It's like it just comes out and is against law enforcement. And, you know, the way to do that, you know, you don't come out and take an issue and just tell them that they're doing it all wrong. They can say, you can sort of mitigate what you're saying. You can be pro-law enforcement. You can be pro-safety and still make some critiques. But it looks to me like they're actually trying to divide our community when the way and the tone that they talk about this. Now, we saw this with the debate over voting. When you got voting bills here in the state and other states that are being passed, you can talk about the specifics of that. But local officials addressing this issue, again, I think without knowing the facts and stating things that are inaccurate, how do you limit drop boxes when you've never had them before? And so, again, an issue that it appears elected officials, you know, are trying to divide us on. Now, the problem of this is, you know, I guess they're doing it because they think it is scoring points with people they know is going to vote for them. Or they think when they run for office, and maybe they have some illusions of higher office. I don't know. But the issue here in Leon County, which I find interesting, is that all the elected officials are you know, these are nonpartisan offices, but let's be clear, everybody knows a party ID of these officials. They're all Democrats. So when elected officials start trying to criticize each other or get on the wrong side of the issue, for example, like on this Southside development issue, they actually are starting to fight among themselves. Now, it's a little different than the voting issue, but probably more like the law enforcement issue, where you have some people that that are elected that see it in a little bit different light. And so it does what it does do is it exposes sort of what is happening. And I think this thing, this you know, the narrative that the South Side is being ignored, Commissioner Curtis Richardson said, look, you know, if you want to talk about that 25 years ago, you know, you probably would get more mileage out of it. But now with the amount of money that's being invested in Gaines Street, downtown, yes, in Frenchtown, on the South Side, FAMU Way, you look at the FSU Gateway, which is a South Side project, I think that that becomes, you know, more of a false argument and something that somebody, the elected officials that make that, need to be called out on it. Now, you know, where's this going in terms of the future and the implications? Well, I think if you look at this Gateway vote and you look at the reason why you had 9 people vote for it, is transportation, benefits, and jobs. And I think this is where you get into where we're going as a community. Now, there's no doubt that we've got a progressive wing of elected officials. We've got basically a group that seems to be more pro-growth and more moderate in how they govern locally. But, you know, this 9-3 vote makes it look like that, you know, it was sort of a slam dunk. But if you look at the city commission, if this was a city commission vote, it would have been 3-2. So that's one vote from doing away with a project, or really, I guess, putting up some obstacles in a project that, you know, most of the elected officials viewed as positive in helping the transportation infrastructure and building our economy. So the concern here is that we have elected officials that are trying to divide our community, and the end result, look, if you think it gets you elected to a local elected office, the school board, the city commission, or the county commission, okay. But, you know, that's probably not going to have, in the ultimate course of business, having an impact on me. But when your election strategy starts to impact the growth of the community, providing jobs instead of government assistance. Now, this thing about roads, you know, we heard we don't need the Northeast Gateway. We need to rely more on public transportation. Look, public transportation is a massive failure in the city of Tallahassee. That doesn't mean we don't need it. But that what it does mean is there are certain areas that it's just not going to work. I think it is something that is needed for those that are in need of transportation that are close to the city core. But to argue that this Northeast Gateway should have been avoided and we should be promoting public transportation I think it reveals something we need to keep an eye on, because it's just not feasible at this point. It's not feasible for the next, I would argue, 10 to 20 years. But when we start to impact, like creating a job, I think we need to evaluate exactly why these elected officials are trying to divide us. And I think the city commission elections are going to be very pivotal in the next 2 to 6 years. And, you know, I went and checked the campaign website to see for those who have decided to run. There's not a lot of competition right now on for the city commission positions or for Leon County Commission positions. So my point is not saying that there's, you know, that there are current people that should be, you know, unelected, but we've got to have competition. We've got to have a discussion of these issues, and we got to find out where people stand. And I'll be up front with you on Commissioner Porter. I think she's put herself in a box here, voting against not only the Northeast Gateway, voting against the fulfillment center, that is still a possibility. It was going to create 1,000-1,500 jobs. I think those are issues we got to get through. Why are officials voting against some of these issues when, you know, 9-3 is a pretty solid vote? You got staff, you got professional staff that's telling you that there's going to be transportation benefits and economic benefits. Why are you voting against them? And, you know, just to say you want to delay it or because you want some sidewalks and some other roads, I don't know that that's enough to get it done. And when you start dividing people to try to get votes for it, I think that even signals another level of concern that I think the community needs to take on. And again, just to get people to talk, to figure out where we're headed, because I just don't, you know, Brian Welch is a rookie commissioner. I considered moderate to left. He is, he's a rookie commissioner in the sense that, you know, he hasn't been in the process. And if you would have heard him speak at the Northeast Gateway vote, I think he was very clear in why he was voting for it. And he made a lot of sense. And that's someone that I don't think is infatuated with reelection at this point, infatuated with the politics of the moment. I think it was an honest and upfront discussion. And I don't think we got a lot of that from a number of officials. I think there's a lot of politics involved and a lot of jockeying for position. And so, anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. And again, this whole segment was my opinion. And I'm allowed to do that here on this radio show, but it's something that I am starting to see, and I think the listeners should be aware of. All right, when we get back, we'll talk about some local economic news. Residential real estate home sales are out. We'll look at that, and we'll look at gas prices. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades that anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen. The quality materials like granite quartz and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they do not mark up the cost of stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give Spartan Stoneworks a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. We appreciate their sponsorship. All right, well, actually pivoting to homes, residential resales data that we follow with Taos Reports and here on Above the Fold for May is out, and the numbers continue to increase. This May, there were 338 single-family resales, averaging a price of $307,000 sold. So if you go back and compare that to last May, that's there was 229 homes sold for a price of $267,000. So that's about a 10% increase in pricing, sale price, and then of goods, see, 229, 328. So that's about 100 homes. Gee whiz, that's like almost a 30%, 40% increase in transactions from last May. We'll have an article up on this soon and look at the annual trends. But, you know, one of the things here is you start talking about a bubble. You know, are we in a real estate bubble like we were back in the 2008? And I wanted to give you some comparable information. So this chart that we get with the data provider that we subscribe to has got a neat little chart that shows the appreciation history of various prices of homes all the way back to 2000. And so, for example, in 2000, if you take a home that sold for $300,000 in 2000, during the run-up in 2007, it reached a price of $550,000. And then, obviously, there was the crash, and it moved down to a low of $400,000. But then it started going back up, and now we have surpassed, in most of these pricing categories, have surpassed the peak in 2007. So for a home that sold for $275,000, $300,000 in 2000, was up to $550,000, and then it fell, now is back up over $550,000. So if you look at the more moderately priced homes, let's take one that was sold for $150,000 in 2000. It increased to a little over 250,000, and then fell back to about 200,000 during the fall. But now that home is back up to $350,000. And so we're definitely, the question about if we're in a bubble or not, you know, people argue that the conditions that we're seeing are much different. That still doesn't mean that there might not be a bubble. Given inflation, the price of lumber, interest rates are obviously really low. But this data shows us that we have reached the appreciation rates that are taking prices of homes above the maximum during the bubble of 2007-2008. So that is definitely worth keeping an eye on. Now, the question is, you know, the reaction to a bubble can be doesn't have to be as steep as it was last time. It could be just a flattening of what's going on. But I mean, here in Tallahassee, and again, you know, the reaction to a bubble in real estate can be, you know, defined by some local parameters. You know, here in Tallahassee, we have a shortage of land to build new construction, i.e. part of the reason why the Northeast Gateway was so important to a number of businesses. And so is that something that's going to complicate this? You know, would other areas that have more homes see the price of the sale of homes decrease, where somewhere like Tallahassee that is still a short supply would not be as impacted by, you know, being maybe in a bubble with regards to real estate prices? We'll have to keep an eye on it. You know, I think that it'll be interesting to see, and, you know, you hate to put all your, or not put all your marbles in one basket, but to look at the impact of a fulfillment center where you're talking about 1,000 to 1,500 jobs. And, you know, as we've talked about, in other areas, when they move into an area, these fulfillment centers, they hire pretty quickly. So when you start having demands for jobs in the job market, you know, is that going to have an impact on real estate prices? Is it going to keep them higher? Is it going to force more development in other areas that may not be as attractive right now? We'll have to keep an eye on that, but very interesting time to be following real estate. Now, pivoting to gas prices, you know, there's a lot of great websites that track gas prices and around the country and in different areas. But I pulled up a chart and I put in three locations. I put in the USA average, I put in the Florida average, and I also put in Tallahassee. And you know, if you look at it, it's just so consistent across all three of those areas. So gas is in all three of those areas is right at $3 a gallon. This is for regular currently. And a year ago, it was at $2 a gallon. So there's a 50% increase in the cost of gas over 12 months. And again, there's not a lot of variation when you put these charts or these lines over that period of time on a chart. The United States or Florida basically is following what Tallahassee is. Now, what you do notice, and I'm not going to claim to know the answer to this, but it is very interesting that the move to increase gas prices began the end of November. It was still, the gas prices were still between $2 and $2.15 from June of 2020 up to November 2020. It was November of 2020 that it started moving from about $2.15 up to where it is now, $3. So when I say you've had a 50% increase over the last year, you've actually had about a 50% increase in the last 5 or 6 months. And so that is huge. Now, I will say that the increase has just started again. It reached 285 in March, so it's been a little bit flat since then. But based on the policies that are being followed nationally, you know, it'll be interesting to see if this comes down. I'm starting to read and get the suspicion that it's not going to be coming down anytime soon. And if you want to talk about an impact on budgets and, you know, on people that really need money, this is a regressive tax. This 50% increase in fuel costs is a regressive tax on people that can afford it the least. And so anyway, we'll keep an eye on the gas prices. I think it's something worth following now, especially given to the level that it's at here locally. And I've obviously nationally too, and find out exactly how that's going to impact us here with regards to our pocketbooks. All right, that's our show for the day. Thanks for tuning in. Have a dry weekend, a happy Father's Day, and we will be back here on Tuesday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.